Hello, everybody. Jace here. I just wanted to come on before the episode starts and apologize for the sound quality. Unfortunately, I lost the original file. I'm not going to get into the details and bore you with that, but I was able to recover it through some different machinations and techniques. But there's a bit of an echo when Frank talks sometimes, and I just couldn't get rid of it in the post-production. So again, I listened to the whole thing. It's not too bad. There are some spots where it gets a little tough to understand. And, you know, of course, Frank would be the first one to say he's hard to understand sometimes anyway with his accent. But I do thank him for joining as always. I think Pestilence is a great series. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to volume two. So again, I apologize for the quality of the audio. Hopefully we can avoid these mishaps in the future, but it's part of podcasting, you know, what can I say? So anyway, thanks for your support, everyone. Really appreciate you, everybody listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. It's time for another Aftershock Monday episode. And today we're going to be talking about a title that I've mentioned on the show before, but we haven't had a chance to really spotlight it. And I'm lucky enough to have the writer, Frank Thierry, join me. And we're going to be talking about Pestilence. So welcome to the show, Frank.
Thank you for having me, Jace. Should be fun.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Being that this is your first time on the show, before we talk about the book, I always like to ask everybody kind of about their history with comics. Did you grow up reading them? How did that whole thing happen for you?
I did grow up, you know, when I was younger, I read comics, and then after a while, I stopped, honestly. I didn't get back at the comics really until I started working reading comics. When I interned at Marvel, that's when I started reading comics again.
And when you were young, growing up, did you have any favorites? I mean, were they a big part of your life, or was it just something that kind of was casually there?
Well, I've always gravitated, and I worked to tough guy characters, you know, villain characters, you know. The Thing was always a personal favorite of mine, mainly because you can hear in my voice, I sound like the freaking Thing. So I always liked the Thing. I like Wolverine. I liked, and then, you know, you're growing up, when you're smaller, you like Batman, Superman. You like those Spider-Man. I always loved Spider-Man, you know. But I growing up, I was more the Marvel guy than the DC guy, to be honest with you. Other than Batman and Superman, I always liked Batman and Superman.
Right on. Yeah, definitely. I could definitely see you being a big fan of the Thing.
I've actually done some voiceover work for Marvel. I did the Thing on one occasion. I've done Wolverine, and I did Phoebe Cuckoo.
That's awesome.
Phoebe Cuckoo, yeah. They wanted Phoebe Cuckoo to sound like me, so go figure.
So you mentioned you had the internship at Marvel, so that was really kind of how you broke into the industry and gradually made a spot for yourself?
Yes, I went to St. John's University. I actually, a lot of people don't know this, I actually went into their art program. I was an artist at first, but I tried to break in and Marvel as an artist, and not, as you see, I'm such a good artist, I'm a writer now. So. I tried to break in as an artist, and when I was my senior year, we had to do an internship. And one of the internships that was available for St. John was Marvel Comics. So I said, why not? So I went and I interviewed with Bob Harris. Bob was competitor at the X-Men line, and he would soon become editor-in-chief. So I was there for that whole time period with him. And it was honestly valuable because I learned, you know, I got to know people, I got to learn the ropes, I got to see how the business works. I always tell Fabian, you know, I appreciate them all as nice to the intern. And his response was, you're an intern? I was like, you fucking scumbag. You don't remember I was an intern? You know what I mean? But you get to know people, you get to know the process and what to do and what not to do. And it's really an invaluable, honestly, to try to, if you guys try to break into the industry.
Great. And what are some of your more well-known previous works? Because I know you've been around a while. I've read, you know, some of your stuff prior to this. So what else do you have out there?
I mean, plenty of stuff. I mean, mostly when I started, again, after my internship, I was on staff at Marvel. And then I was pitching stuff while I was on staff, which I don't want to do anymore. That's not a way to break in anymore. But Don Quixada asked me to co-write Iron Man with him. I co-wrote Iron Man with him, and then I took over Iron Man when he left because he became an Iron Man. And then I had Wolverine, Deadpool. Everything took off from there as far as Marvel goes. I mean, I've written The Punisher. I've written plenty of characters for Marvel. And then now DC, I worked on The Metal, I worked on Harlequin, I've worked on Red Sonja, I've worked on The Darkness, The Top Cow, and I got a pretty decent body of work here. And I've done video games too. Marvel vs. Capcom 3.3, 3.5, and Marvel vs. Capcom 8. I worked on all of them.
Nice. Well, let's talk about Pestilence in particular. Volume 1 finished up, I think, 2 months ago?
A couple months ago. I don't know exactly when.
So Volume 1, 6 issues, great story. It was really...
I agree. It's a great story. I'm with you there, pal.
Yeah, for those of our listeners who might not be familiar, what's the basic premise of behind Pestilence, that first volume?
The basic premise behind Pestilence is, what if the Black Plague as we know it was actually a zombie apocalypse that was covered up by the church? And this concept was originally came up with by two Hollywood writers that they approached Aftershock with. The game, it originally... was pitched as a video game, believe it or not. Which I think you could see, I think if when you read it, you can see how it's a video game. Well, these guys went to Aftershock. They wanted to do it as a comic to help try to sell the idea and whatnot. Then Mike Marks had become the editor-in-chief of Aftershock. I know Mike a million years worked together at Marvel on Batman stuff, on... DC and Marvel, Batman stuff at Marvel. We worked on Wolverine together. So we know each other a million years. And it was only a matter of time before we worked together. They came to me with this idea, and then I took it and I ran with it, and I expanded greatly on the concept. And that's here we are now.
Yeah, what's interesting is the fact, and I completely agree with Mike on this. So Mike, here's this idea. You're probably the first name that pops into his head. This story is so in your wheelhouse. Did you really feel like that when he brought the idea to you? Like, you got you excited?
100%. He knows I'm a history nut. Me and Mike are both history nuts. For Christ's sake, he let me do fucking Apocalypse vs. Dracula. That Apocalypse vs. Dracula was, I mean, the both of us were in a bar one night. And I said, and I kind of said it to him as a joke, and the link between the characters was that they were both in the Crusades, and Mike being a history nut said, yeah, you know, that's a good idea. He goes, give me a picture on that. So sometimes you don't know where to come from. But Mike knows that I'm a history nut, and he, and I also violent as hell. My such violent as hell. We don't like to for this. You know, we both like historical history stuff. So yeah, when they brought it to me, I was like, yeah, this is gonna be for me. This is gonna be a good fit here.
So, being that you're such a history nut, were you familiar with this time period, like intimately familiar, or did you still have to do a little more research to kind of?
Well, you got to do research. You got to do your research. That is the one thing he asked with doing historical stuff. And what I like about it is, you know, you try to fit in between the crack stuff. You know, we have this basic time period, but it, like case in point, we made Roderick and Joffrey were crusaders, okay? But if you look at the early crusades, the crusades is a lot longer than people think. And we had to have some involved in some of the later crusades. You know, and just like, you know, just for the time period to match up. But little stuff, things like that, you know, where you have to try to, you know, look, it's not a documentary, but you want, but if you can get some of those things up right, you want to get it. You know, it's a first-time documentary. It's fucking zombies and some of the black ways. But if you can get some of the stuff right, you like to get it right, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I find it so interesting. I remember the first time when I saw the advance solicit for issue one, and it's like, okay, the Black Plague was actually zombies, not, you know, some disease carried by rats. It's one of those ideas that makes so much sense that I can't believe somebody didn't think of it before. Did you kind of think that as well?
I did. I think the thing with you know, look, we're a zombie book, but we're not really a zombie book. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, after everything with Kirkman is done with The Walking Dead and so much, the zombie stuff is, I think some people have kind of shied away from the zombie stuff. So I think, you know, like Kirkman has the lock on that, but I think unless you're going to tell something different about the zombie stuff, about the zombie genre, you know, I think people have shied away from it. But in our case, I think we're telling something different. And our zombies become very different. And really, we're more about the zombies. It's about the camaraderie. It's about the group itself. And it's the church conspiracy more than anything else. So,
yeah, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, I think you have to tell something different if you're going to tell a zombie story. In this day and age now, with zombies, you know, being as, you want some people to tell a zombie story, you have to tell something different if you're going to tell a zombie story.
Yeah, I agree. We'll talk a little bit about the themes in a minute, but I mean, you're totally right. It's not focused on zombies or not necessarily, you know, trying to solve a zombie problem. Very political and very much about the core group of characters. How's it been?
And our zombies are a bit different. As in Volume 2, they were more different. But in Volume 1, when they start off as the mindless slumbering brain zombies, they start to evolve to the point where if they had previous skills in their previous life, they start to adapt those skills. So if you're knocking off a soldier, if a soldier has been affected, he's going to get those skills. And that's what happens at the end. Fight Lux and has to bring this zombie apocalypse to a close. They're hunted by former comrades and former soldiers that have been turned. So it's not just your lumbering, you know, zombies that you can, you know, sidestep in 5 seconds. It's a little bit more intricate than that.
Yeah, it definitely adds a sense of danger.
Right.
How's it been working with Olog, the artist on the series? And did you know about his work previously? Did you bring him on? Did you find him through Aftershock? How did that work?
Aftershock brought Olog on, and Olog, a lot of people don't realize, is one of the artists on Cars 3. The big movie, which his work is a lot different on Aftershock in this book than it was on Cars 3. But I think Olog, what he does best more than anything is his zombies are awesome, you know? I mean, that's when they approached me with Olog, they said, what do you think about this guy? And he's able to do, first of all, the differences in all the zombies. He has one that a lot of people famously looked at was, towards the end, there's a large woman, large Russian kids, and she's breastfeeding them zombie kids as she's coming. You know, after the group, able to do all these differences, all these zombies, all these different zombies, and all these different, you know, one thing that we have in Passwords is these big, massive fucking killing scenes with zombies and hordes of zombies, and he's able to do that really, really well. I think that he does that as good as anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And his storytelling, because a lot of times when you have big combat scenes like that, big fighting scenes, things can get crowded and it's kind of hard to follow. Like, what's going on in this panel? Never felt that way at all when I was – not a single panel in the book did I ever think that.
Yeah, he's able to do it. To me, I think that's what he does best. He's able to direct the fight scenes where, you know, you're able to, like you said, even in the fight scene, sometimes you have a quiet moment. Sometimes, you know, hits the beat, except when they need to hit, you know. I needed someone to get down and dirty in this book, and he's right there with me down in the gutter. He's able to do it, so it works well.
Awesome. And how was the reception for Volume 1? Did you have a lot of fans really respond to it?
It was great. It was everybody. Reviews were great. Fans were great. Initial sales in the book all great. Fans really dug it. Like I said, we're not as quite a zombie book, but people still have that affinity for zombies. It was that, and also the start, you know, I mean, the basic concept is maybe we're nice fighting zombies. I mean, you know, that was a selling point people went for. So, yeah, we did go with the initial one, hence why there was a Volume 2.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like we were saying, it's such a great idea. So, you mentioned Volume 2 comes out this Wednesday, May 30th. And how is the story continuing?
The story, we basically... it occurs a few years after the events of Volume 1. And when we pick up with Roger Helms, who's, you know, Roger and his group flying left, they tried to stop the zombie apocalypse, and many of them were killed along the way. And Roger ended up stopping the zombie apocalypse. The church... he had the church the whole time was trying to stop him because they were covering up their role in their complicity in allowing the zombie apocalypse to continue because they didn't want Christ the only one to have come back from the dead, and they saw a problem with it, so they covered it up. And so basically Quiet Lux and Vine 1 had to deal with both the church trying to cover up and the apocalypse itself. And this group, this Quiet Lux, who were basically the cleaners for the church, were sent in to take care of them, and they lost some people on the way. They uncovered the conspiracy, and in the end, Roger Jones, who was the leader of the group, ended up stopping the apocalypse, mainly doing a lot of the effects by using the Holy Grail, which the Tyrant could secretly have. But at the end of that Volume 1, he and the remaining of his men become fugitives, and they're trying to spread the word that the church, you know, is behind all this and whatnot. When we open up with Volume 2, well, Roderick is basically Clint Eastwood at the beginning of Unforgiven. It's a few years later, and he... And his wife, Jacqueline, and his son is born now, and he has a little fishing village in the end of in the south of France. He has no interest of saving the world anymore. He's done his duty, but as it is the plague rears its head again, and he's brought it to action.
Yeah, I can't wait. I've read the first issue, and yeah, it's there's some interesting ideas that you seem like you're going to be exploring in this volume, kind of expanding on what you did in the first volume. Have your ideas, like now that you got the first issue, the first volume done, the ideas that you thought, have those started to evolve as you're heading into Volume 2, or is it still pretty clear in your mind from the first kind of story you wanted to tell?
Well, we basically, when they approached us with the main idea, and I expanded on the idea, we basically did it for that Volume 1 with the idea that, okay, maybe, you know, we left the door open for Volume 2. Well, like I said, it's been well enough that there's Volume 2, so we're going to have to come up with Volume 2. And what we see in the first issue is something very different in this in Volume 2. It's, you know, one of the things that we had said in Volume 1 was that Satan was behind the Black Plague. Well, you know, at that point, we didn't know if that was literal or if that was just, you know, religious mumbo jumbo. But you know what? It was true, and Satan is the center in Volume 2. And his control over the zombies is very different now. They're not slumbering. He's controlling them. It's more like they're possessed. And it's more like a high mind thing where he has control over the subject. So, and that's something that the Roderick and the remaining members of the X-Quiet Lux are going to have to deal with.
Yeah, and we see in the first issue of Volume 1 also Church heavily involved. And I love this idea that you explored in Volume 1. It seems like you're going to keep it up in Volume 2. And it's this idea of religion can be something that's impure, you know, and especially at this time in history, that was a very much a foreign thought. But it seems like you're trying to say something about that. You know, it's religion, doesn't mean it's perfect, doesn't mean it's completely
perfect. Yeah, no, religion, and it's not perfect. You know, I'm actually someone who is, I don't believe in God, you know what I mean? But I think, you know, you have to organize religions, and sometimes you have to shake your head, you know. You're having cover-ups, you know what I mean? I think you can be religious and not listen to everything necessarily that organized religion tells you. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and you know when all that stuff came out with the priests, and you know I was very, you know I'm a father, and that was very disturbing to me that they covered that up. But you know, so yeah, you have organized religions. I think there's good. There's definitely good people in organized religions, and I think there's definitely not so good people in organized religions. And they use the religion to their advantage in some cases. That's what we see here. There are good people in our book who are religious. I mean, the Men of Quiet Lux, Carmen Sawyer, who was instrumental in helping Roderick and his men, escape in Volume 1. And we see something happen to him in the beginning. But then you have a character like Carmen Price. And Carmen Price is not a good religious guy. Carmen Price is the son of a bitch who, you know, was front and center in covering everything up. And by this time, in Volume 2, he became Pope Price. Now, it's the one area where we talk about historical fiction. I didn't want to use an actual historical figure because what we have Price doing is actually pretty fucked up. So I don't want, you know, I wanted to be able to have the latitude to have a fake character that we could just have him do these terrible things. In Volume 2, I mean, he's doing some really terrible shit. So you got that to look forward.
Yeah, you don't want to disparage an actual person who may have been a pretty good person, but I completely...
I don't want to disparage a Pope. That was, you know, I mean, for the moment, you know, but I don't want to disparage an actual person, so I chose to do a fictional character instead.
Yeah, exactly. And the interesting thing I find about religion, I agree with you 100%. You know, it's all about the people, you know. There's good people and bad people in religious space, just like any walk of life.
It's any organization, any company, any organization. There's good people and there's bad people. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I think there's some good from religion, and there's some not so good. You know, it's up to the individual to the way he's going to lead his life. You know, I think you can have religion and be a good person, absolutely.
Yeah.
But in some of these cases, we have characters in our book that abuse religion, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, the fact of the matter is that religion as a concept is something that we as people have come up with. You know, I'm not saying that God doesn't exist or does. You know, that's not the point I'm making. But the point I'm making is we as beings are flawed, right? We're not perfect, and so anything we create, even something like an organized religion, is going to reflect those flaws. Yeah. So.
And people have asked me about God, and like I said, I believe in God. And we have Satan in our book. And if we have Satan in our book, we have God in our book. So, I mean, it's absolutely, Satan does exist in you know, and we'll see him in our book. I mean, he's front and center, and, you know, we see his plan go further than what we even considered in volume one.
Yeah, I can't. I really just can't wait to read the rest of the story. Let's talk a little bit about historical conspiracies, because at the heart of it, that's really what this story is. And you mentioned how much of a fan of history you are. Again, is this maybe not this specific story, but is writing like a historical conspiracy something you've always wanted to do?
It's always a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun. I find it. I mean, I've written I worked on Punishing the Law for Marvel. Where I had Punisher Noir take on
Dutch Hill.
And, you know, and part of the fun of that stuff is plugging in parishes, you know, the whole mystery of conspiracy of who killed Dutch Hill, and how, you know, what, and, you know, the answer in my book was the Punisher of that era. And it's fun to sometimes to put in, plug in parishes and situations. You know, history has plenty of mysteries, and it's fun sometimes to answer those mysteries in the wrong way, you know? One of the things that we like to think of, and I have to have to worry over history behind that, and that plays out a little bit behind this one. We reveal that Wyatt Luck was actually, the precursor to that was the Knights Templar, and it was a future. Fight Luck members, you know, Cardinal Shore recruited, was a former Knight Templar, and he's the one who recruited Rand McCallum and Joffrey into Fight Luck. So there's a connection there between the Knight Templar and Fight Luck, and we play with that also even in Volume 2, as we'll see.
Yeah, so listeners, if you're a big history fan, should be right up your alley. Last theme I want to touch on, Frank, is sacrifice. You know, that's kind of a theme of the Catholic religion in and of itself. But it's definitely a theme that we saw. You know, you mentioned in the first volume, Roderick and his clan. They lose quite a few members along the way. Is that something right when you came up with the way you wanted to tell the story that you knew you wanted to explore, or did it just happen sort of organically?
I think a bit of both. I noticed that one of the main themes was going to be brotherhood. Was going to be the group of men, loyalty to these men, loyalty to church, loyalty to God, loyalty amongst these men and this group. And they loyal to each other, so much so that when James is turned, okay, Roderick doesn't choose to kill him, okay? He basically ties him up and brings him along. And that's something different that we haven't seen, you know, for the most part, where he's accompanied him the whole time, and he refuses to kill him out of loyalty, and then at the very end, that his loyalty is rewarded when James is transformed, and when his teammate, Domenico, turns on him from order to the church, and they have this big fight, and he loses the fight, and he's about to be killed. Roderick is rewarded because it's James who is suddenly killed, who kills Domenico and saves Roderick's life. So, yeah, those things definitely do play into Volume 1, and they even more so play into Volume 2. We open up with, the very first few pages is we reveal that one of the characters has decided to kill the Pope and is about to basically go on a suicide mission. We don't find out who that character is until later in the series, or why they want to kill the Pope, but that's great to go off in the series. So yeah,
Awesome. So, you know, if you didn't already want to read that, like, Assassination Mission to Kill the Pope, I just get
you. There you go. What more do you want than that? Someone's going to whack the Pope. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
And that's like the first three pages.
Yep, you've got zombies, you've got sword fights, and an assassination mission to kill the Pope. It's got everything. Can't wait to read it. Can't wait to
pick it. Yep, we got a lot of stuff.
Well, Frank, I really want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us about Pestilence today. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners? Anything else coming up that you maybe want to plug?
Okay, well, Die Hard coming out from Insight Comics. I have Good Head to Hunger, which is a regular book for art. Obviously, Pestilence comes out the 30th.
Yep.
Volume 2. What else do I have? I have another DC project that I can't talk to about, but I think fans will be, it's a character I've worked with before, let's put it that way. I think that's really it for now that I mainly could talk about. So.
All right, fair enough. And if fans want to follow you on social media so they can find out when you get to announce that DC project and all the other stuff that you're working on, where's the best place on social media to keep up to date with you?
I'm on the Twitter, I'm on the Facebook. You can hit me up at Frank Fieri, on Facebook.
Great. And listeners, I'll put links to Frank's Facebook and Twitter in the show notes so you can go and know exactly where to follow. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all our other coverage on pop culture, movies, TV shows, all that kind of good stuff. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social media platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank Frank for joining me.
Thank you for having me, and good job, and let's buy some Pestilence issues, kid.
Yeah. All right. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.